Hi, empath listeners, and welcome to episode 4 of Spiritually Speaking, a podcast about things that bring meaning and purpose to our lives and help us along our journey to actualizing the best version of ourselves. Our topic today is our relationship with a sister hospice program in South Africa called Hospice Wits. Hospice Wits has an amazing story about how they got started that's not so different from the way Suncoast Hospice got their beginning. Hospice Wits was initiated in 1979 because a couple in Johannesburg, Stan and Shirley Hennen, identified the need in their community for hospice care, and they began with a part-time nurse offering care to patients in their own home. Then in around 1983, a property was donated, and Hospice Wits continued to grow and expand their scope of services from there. But while we share the holistic and interdisciplinary approach to patient-centered care and all of the foundational values and principles of hospice care, our sister hospice operates in completely different circumstances and with limited resources, and without the same kinds of regulations and oversight which characterize hospice care here in the United States. This partnership between Suncoast Hospice and Hospice Wits is a deep and long-standing one. Members of our staff have visited them in South Africa, and members of their staff have visited us here in the United States. So listen now as several of these staff members are reunited for a discussion about hospice care in our current environment. Joining us on the podcast today from Suncoast Hospice and Empath Health are Dr. Stacy Orloff, Vice President of Innovation and Community Health. She has worked for Empath Health for 30 years, and during that time, she's held a variety of positions, learning much from each one. Stacy's chaired our Hospice Wits partnership since her first trip to South Africa in 2007. Also with us from Suncoast Hospice is Dwight Douglas, a Florida licensed clinical social worker who has served in the area of bereavement for the past 27 years with Suncoast Hospice. He's part of the community emergency response team and a trained trauma specialist. Dwight was part of the first exchange group to visit Hospice Wits and represents the social work department and HIV/AIDS programs. He co-led a major fundraiser called A Taste of Good Hope, which raised funds for the partnership and has been involved in other funds and friend-raising events. From Hospice Wits, we have with us Jackie Kay, who joined Hospice Wits in March of 2007 as the HR manager, and then in April of 2014 was appointed as the CEO of the organization. She says, "It's a privilege and an honor to lead an interdisciplinary team who are all passionate about palliative care." Jackie's visited Empath Health and Suncoast Hospice on the staff exchange program in both 2011 and 2019, reveling in the warm relationship and friendships made with the staff of our sister hospice. Also with us from Hospice Wits is Dr. Craig Howes. Dr. Howes has been passionate about palliative care since his second year of medical school, and he is a motivated practitioner with a special interest in ethics. He's worked at hospice since January of 2018. Welcome, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Stacy, let's kick this off with you. You've been involved with this partnership between Suncoast Hospice and Hospice Wits since the very beginning, right? I mean, what has this relationship meant to you personally, and how has it broadened your perspective on the world?
Thanks, Jim. Actually, our partnership actually began a little before my involvement in 2007. Need to give credit to Becky McDonald and Barbara Campbell Kerr from Hospice Wits, who actually were at a meeting sponsored through the National Hospice Organization, as it was known then, now NHPCO. And they were there to talk about this growing program called FASHA at the time, the Foundation to Support Hospices in Sub-Sahara Africa. And legend is that Becky and Barbara met in the elevator in the building going to the meeting and kind of looked at each other and said, well, we could partner together. And, you know, so this lovely relationship began. So, you know, here, Becky really was our champion and made a couple solo trips. But the partnership, I would say, and Becky would agree with that too, really took off when she led our first trip in 2007. And that was the trip that Dwight and I were both on. There were actually eight of us that went. That was the largest trip we ever made in terms of the number of people. And that at that point, actually during that trip, Becky had asked if I would be interested in taking over the chairing of the partnership. You asked me something really important, and that was about the personal. How does this affect me?
Yes.
Profoundly? You know, I mean, I can tell you in terms of professionally, and I certainly will mention that, why I think it's valuable to us as Empath Health and what I think about for Hospice Vits.
Yeah, tell us a little more about that.
I have met people who have touched my hearts and, you know, are just wrapped around my heart in ways that I think words can't really describe, and have made my life that much richer, have opened my eyes to the plight of other parts of the world. And without this partnership, you know, we never would have met. And of course, one of those folks is participating on the podcast, and that's, you know, Jackie. And there are a lot of other people like Jackie at our sister hospice. And it the perspective of doing hospice care all around the world, I think is something really meaningful for all of us to learn. Certainly it was a lesson when Dwight and I were there. You don't need a lot of big fancy equipment to do amazing work. And I learned that, I saw that in action with the nursing sisters that I had the opportunity to make visits with, the social workers, the spiritual care providers. So it was, you know, just profound again. We're not the only people living on this, you know, ball that's spinning in the sky.
I remember hearing, you know, some of your accounts of the trips that you took when you came back during staff meetings and everything, and remember how moving it was. And part of what was so moving about it was how much those trips had so clearly, deeply impacted you. And so that first trip was in 2007. Jackie, you were there, but you were the HR director at the time. Do you remember that first trip when Stacy came?
I certainly do. I certainly remember the crowd, or the group, let's call them, that came through. It was fantastic because we built relationships immediately. What I loved about that group was that, in fact, all the groups, is that they participated so consumingly. They just came in and developed these relationships with all our staff. Many of the staff, unfortunately, have left us over the years, but it was such an exciting relationship for me, having just joined a hospice. I hadn't been at a hospice before, and to see what they felt about what, as Stacey mentioned, we were doing without as much equipment as the United States have. So yeah, I was intrigued. I was very excited about that relationship building. And Stacey and I have built a relationship that is beyond description since then, because it's not just about the two of us and our personal relationship that has grown, but it's actually about the care that your staff, that the staff from Empath Health and Suncoast Hospice have given to us as Hospice Vits. So yeah, I was there at the time, and it was very exciting for me.
Now, Dwight, was that your trip too in 2007? And what memories are still with you about that whole experience?
Yes, I was fortunate to go with that first large group and represented the psychosocial staff. And I was asked to speak on a couple of topics on compassion fatigue and HIV/AIDS stigma at that time. So Stacy and I both represented psychosocial and kind of teamed up together in many different ways. And as what you have heard already so far, the word relationship keeps coming back to mind. That, and as Jackie said, even though some people are no longer with our organization or theirs over the years that we have formed those bonds, thank goodness, because of social media, we are able to still stay connected and continue those deep, deep relationships and all. But what strikes me and so many different memories of first visiting is you go to learn about each other's cultures and share, and we really saw so many more similarities than differences. And I think that's what we built upon in some of the striking things that I remember. So finally, he's doing some home visits with some of the nurses, or they call sisters there, that held children or touched their patients, and they spent so much time just being very present and observing. And all the while they were diagnosing, and they were doing all sorts of things just by a different form of caring that is still, you know, not different than ours, but how we approach it oftentimes. And again, the doing so much with so little and the care that we saw there, we learned so much more than I think they ever learned from us.
Mm-hmm. So what, you know, I know, Dwight, that that you spoke so clearly about connecting with the things that were similar and common, that were commonly shared. What were some of the cultural differences that you noted in your trip that, you know, it felt like it was different than it would be here in the U.S.?
Well, I think one of those things that we saw in the tribal parts of the different folks there was like the Sangoma, or the spiritual guide that I guess you would look at in the Native American shaman or different common, but how so many people would engage with the shaman. And we met some, and how they even worked in the area of bereavement and health and working the meds together, sort of like what all our alternative care would be. But that was the one thing that was really prominent that stuck out in my mind in the area of spirituality as well and medicine.
Wow, what was the name of that practitioner?
Sangoma, am I saying that correctly, Jackie?
Jackie?
You are? Sangoma.
Yes.
Sangoma.
So I want to jump in too and give a different example, an additional example, because I think Dwight hit it right on about the cultural differences. One thing that struck me a lot and still does is just the difference in regulations, because I think we as Americans have this understanding or assumption that hospice care or palliative care is the same wherever you go around the world, and it's not. I mean, we are bound by our conditions of participation, what Medicare, Medicaid, et cetera, will pay for us. And it's very different in South Africa. Now, they may say, and I'm certainly not going to speak for Jackie or Craig, but you know, the advantage for us, of course, is we have committed funding streams that pay, so that's a good thing. It restricts us in other ways.
Right, sort of a blessing and a curse. So how is this different for the folks at Hospice Vits?
Not having that same regulation allows them to serve a greater and more expansive group of people. And do things. I'm going to give one very specific example of a, frankly, I don't remember if it was my trip in 2007 or 2009, but it was one of my early trips. And I was with a sister. We were, it was an admission visit. And it was a patient who was clearly in a lot of pain. She had advanced cancer, and her family was very concerned about giving her pain medication. So most of the admission was being done in, I don't remember what language, but it was, the native language, because there are 11, I believe, different languages, national languages. And every now and then the sister would say something in English to let me know what she was doing, but was like, oh, I can follow this. This is an admission. And it's all done on paper. And so we got through the admission, and the family, had agreed that yes, they would start giving their, mother, daughter, et cetera, pain medication. But, the sister was kind of pushing the care center, their inpatient right. unit, because she wasn't so confident that would happen. So off we went to our second visit. The sister had all the admission paperwork with her, so nothing had been turned in yet. So from, my head, my perspective, I'm thinking, okay, well, this patient isn't really admitted yet because, the office doesn't have the paperwork, nothing's been processed, all our stuff. And right. Midway through that second visit, the sister got a phone call that the patient was being transported to the IPU in Diepkloof in Soweto. And so, the sister was extremely happy and had said, yes, we need to manage her pain. And I'm thinking and going, oh my gosh, this is incredible, because it wouldn't happen that way for, here. Certainly we would transition a patient from their home to our IPU, but my goodness, what I'm saying, the part of me is like, but you still have all the admission paperwork, but they don't know everything. Right. And I'm thinking, this is amazing. This is the way it can happen. And so just the mindset, when I think in terms of cultural changes too, I think of all the important and needed regulations, and sometimes how it stymies us from doing yeah. what we really believe to be good hospice care. And I was amazed how quickly the hospice VITS, to get a patient admitted and into the IPU and comfortable. And there were no barriers to that happening. I thought that was amazing.
That's incredible. And so, Jackie, I know that you might have a little bit of a different perspective on this as well, because we've heard in the past about some of the daunting challenges that Hospice VITS has faced. And now we find ourselves in the midst of a global pandemic on top of all of that. And while you do enjoy certain freedoms in provision of care that come from not being a highly regulated industry at this point, how have all those challenges impacted you and your staff and your program there in Johannesburg and Soweto?
So we haven't really had the legislative challenges that you have.
Yes.
Our patients in Soweto mainly do not belong to a medical aid scheme. So your Medicare or anything like that. What happens therefore is that they will be transported to the hospital or to obviously hospice if they meet that criteria, need to come in to our inpatient unit. The patients that we have in Soweto tend to need to and want to come into our inpatient unit. The patients in our inpatient unit in Houghton don't necessarily want to or need to. They prefer to be cared for at home. And Dr. Craig Howes will expand on those kind of criteria and admissions, you know, when he chats. Our challenges have really been based on funding, and as well on the fact that our patients really do not have the financial means to go anywhere else but be cared for by Hospice Wits in Soweto. And it's been a challenge for many years, and particularly with our economy changing. We have had a couple of years of difficulties. But despite that, the one thing we have never compromised on is the quality care and support that our palliative care team have always provided to their patients and the families, whether they are in the Houghton area, which is Johannesburg, and the metropolitan area of Johannesburg, or in Soweto, because we are based in, as Stacey has mentioned, Diepkloof, which covers that area that of Soweto. We don't tend to move into the rural areas. That is, there are other hospices that deal with far-reaching rural areas of Johannesburg or South Africa, or even Gauteng, which is another province. From the challenges point of view, we've had to go through, unfortunately, a couple of years of retrenchments of staff. I remember when I joined in 2007, we had 256 permanent staff members. And unfortunately, over the years, we've had to curtail those numbers, and we are now sitting on about 99 staff members.
Oh, my goodness.
So that was three different retrenchment exercises. But I'm finding that the teamwork and the staff participation and the communication is actually far better right now than it has been for a long time. And we have come up with a number of different areas of where we can do things differently, but continue with our core business and partner with other groups or other. At the moment, we're actually partnering with a group called BGM Pharmaceutical Care. Mm. They do renal dialysis, and they have moved into our Soweto building in Diepkloof. The one thing they said to us from the beginning, please keep your home care team there, because we would like to keep them in the community. And everything we do, as you know, is community outreach. So that is a fantastic new development. They are, they've taken up half of our building. We are there with them, and their renal dialysis unit will be offered to the community in Soweto probably in about 5 or 6 weeks' time.
So the economic necessities have kind of inspired new ways of collaboration and community engagement to be able to sustain the important work that you're doing, it sounds like. And well, yes. You know, one of the things that I was wondering about is, I know in our corner of the world, it's been really hard to secure PPE and medical supplies. And Dr. Craig, I was wondering, what have you all been doing as far as instituting protocols for caring for patients and staff during this time? And what's the situation like there in your inpatient unit and with the patients and families that you care for there in Hospice Wits?
So certainly COVID has really thrown us a curveball in how we manage patients on a day-to-day basis. And there is such an awareness around PPE at the moment. And we've had to be a little bit creative because there were initially some supply shortages. And probably our most worrisome supply shortage was when we thought we were going to run out of hand sanitizer. Fortunately, supply chains opened up, and we actually managed to make it through that time without very much in the way of barriers to access to that PPE. I think our biggest challenge has been that all of our inpatient unit staff became infected at some point with COVID, and we were forced to close for about a week, where we didn't actually have nursing staff to look after our patients. Mm-hmm. And I think probably most worrisome is, when we're caring for our patients, we've been quite cautious around admitting patients with COVID disease. As far as I know, we haven't actually had any cases in our unit, which I think is another discussion, but which more speaks to how palliative care should have been taken up in this global pandemic. But because I think we have something great to offer, and we haven't been able to offer that type of care. But certainly, caring for patients with COVID in a unit like ours would require very specific PPE and specific sort of institutional changes to make everyone feel safe. I think there's so much in the way of noise around what the dangers of COVID actually are, and it's really hard to find a place of safety for our staff. And obviously, there's quite a lot of fear around the disease. And so, apart from the PPE availability, which was a real concern, and besides PPE, just basic sanitizer and soap, which was a big problem in South Africa, we had this educational gap, which I think everyone faced across the world. But we've got very many levels of workers within hospice vets, from the medical staff who might have been a bit more informed. But even within the medical staff, we've got in our nursing staff, we've got care worker type workers, we've got sisters, and we've got the doctors, myself and Dr. Magulele. So within there, and obviously pharmacists as well, and everyone has opinions, and trying to find a happy space where everyone feels like they know what's going on in a time of crisis where nobody knows what's going on, was actually one of the, I find to be very interesting, very much like palliative care. We have to make space for the unknown, make space for not knowing what to do, it's sort of microcosm of what palliative care is as a whole. It's been a challenge. And apart from the medical staff, we've obviously got cleaners and cooks and gardeners, and then further down the road in Orange Grove, some retail staff. So we've had to field quite a lot of different levels of questions around COVID and making everyone feel safe without expending too much in the way of our budget to get PPE available. Mm-hmm. I think one of the very, very special things that happened in South Africa was the very quick adoption of fabric masks, because we had a lack of medical PPE. And that was very interesting. We had published, the newspapers published patterns and things to allow people to make fabric masks, and they became available really rapidly.
Yeah, but even with the availability of cloth masks or fabric masks, as you call them, particularly in an ICU setting where, you need to sometimes have airborne precautions, that's really a challenge. And are your ICU units, do they have separate rooms, or are they all the patients in one room together? How is that configured?
So our ICU in Houghton is single rooms. We have space for 11 persons in single rooms, but we kind of max out on staff at about 8 people in the unit. So we have to make changes with staffing if we were to admit more.
It certainly sounds like us here in the U.S., you have faced significant challenges adapting to and responding to the needs of not only the patients we're serving, but our staff as well, as we try to deal with this pandemic.
Yeah, Jackie and I speak monthly either via Skype or Zoom and email pretty regularly with each other. And I think that exactly what you said, Jim, is something that we're feeling very similarly between both of our organizations, because our countries are trying to balance between the economic need of the country and, you know, the safety of its citizens. As Jackie has said, you know, South Africa has struggled for quite some time, even pre-COVID, economically. And so this pandemic, just based on what I hear, has certainly made a much bigger and far-reaching impact. And of course, then we feel this is one way through our partnership, and how we support our sister hospice financially is one way that we can provide some assistance, because we all know how much our country may be struggling in the number of people who have lost jobs. I think it's probably very hard for us to conceptualize just how deeply the economy in South Africa has been affected. And so, you know, we have the means to do something to help. You know, we have a partnership committee. We would love to have more of our staff and volunteers who are listening to the podcast find out about joining our partnership committee. Dwight's a very active member, as are many other folks who have traveled, and many staff and volunteers who have never set foot in South Africa, just have a deep desire to build greater connections between our two organizations. And then, of course, you know, we do provide financial assistance. We have many staff and community members who donate. Some of our amazing staff do payroll deductions, and, you know, every dollar that we raise makes a huge difference to our South African colleagues, and gets sent to our sister hospice. So, you know, we hope that if our staff and volunteers who are listening to the podcast, community members, can contact us, and we would be thrilled to share more information about how somebody can provide either a one-time financial gift or an ongoing gift, because it I think it's, you know, incumbent upon us, and I go back to the word I first used about that profound experience. We do have a 20-year commitment and relationship with our sister hospice, and so we do feel a responsibility that comes from our hearts to want to continue to help.
One of the other things that I'd like to chat about, Jim, is the buddy system that Stacey and I try to put together, so that we have people from Hospice Wits who connect up with people from your side, and they can have a conversation, you know, get some ideas of what's happening on either side, ask for some guidelines. I mean, I think we've had some really good relationships that have grown, and many that have come back with, I'm going to change the way the thrift shop operates because I've been speaking to the persons, you know, and I know that there's differences and there's some exciting things that we could do. When I was there, I obviously brought back a whole lot of stuff. And these were implemented in our thrift shop, and they certainly did make a difference. So that buddy system, we appreciate. The team from Hospice Wits really appreciates that. I'd like us to expand that a little bit more, because we have had a lot of changes in our management team. In fact, we don't have a management team anymore, but we do have first line supervisors, and everybody's now involved in what is it that Hospice Wits is doing, where are we going, how are we going to change things around, you know, what are the new income generating ideas that we are coming up with, because sustainability is what Hospice Wits is now having to focus on. We always appreciate the funding that that we receive from all of you. We are so appreciative to the teen volunteers, to the staff, as Stacey has mentioned, through payroll giving. Any way in which, I mean, Dwight did some beautiful things for us after he came back from our trip. There's so many things that have, you had a cook-off recently as well that raised funds. You know, you are the kings of raising funds, and I'm not necessarily talking just about for us, but we really do appreciate in a time of crisis, not once, but three or four times, we have been able to get funding from Ampath Health Suncoast Hospice, and we really do appreciate it. So to everybody listening, thank you once again from the bottom of our hearts, because we really do appreciate that.
So I'm curious about this buddy system. You know, that would be such an interesting and rich opportunity for people to connect with somebody of their own discipline on the other side of the world, on another continent, doing the same work in a very different setting, and how rich the exchange could be. So I'm wondering, you have lots of nurses, right? And do you have social workers as well, and chaplains, or?
No, so we don't have chaplains and social workers. We've lost our social workers, unfortunately. We do have volunteer counselors that go into the patients' homes or counsel via, you know, at the moment, probably a lot online. So we do have that. We do have a psychosocial team that is not only dealing with our hospice patients. In fact, they're dealing with more of the general public at the moment, going through mental health issues. You know, we're finding that that is a big need out there with COVID, with isolation, social distancing, you know, people dying, friends and family of the COVID virus, or just patients of a hospice. So we've got that out there. We've had quite a few changes. So Stacey and I would need to renew that. But certainly the disciplines that have worked have been the events and marketing, the retail, the thrift shop. We call it our retail shops. We did have our previous doctor who connected up with doctors on your side as well. Stacey, help me out. Who else did we connect? But we found a couple of different, with the actual eventing with the people we had in place. Mm-hmm. So it really is a great opportunity to discuss not only work differences, but also to get some advice and tips from each other. But also just to build that friendship. I mean, Stacey and I have got a wonderful friendship. And it's grown from this. Dwight and I also, I mean, I really appreciate any message that Dwight drops into my messenger, because it is just something that says, hi, I'm there. You know, we've met each other, we know each other, and it's such a special thing. So yeah, a buddy system, a connection between your hospice and our hospice and the people that we've got here is really quite important.
Yeah, I'll jump in and say we've tried it a couple times, and it's, you know, it's been, I think, fairly successful. And then, you know, life takes over, and some of those back and forth communication stops. So I agree with Jackie. I think it would be lovely for us to connect it, and it doesn't even have to be the same disciplines. It's just human to human, one person to another, a hospice or palliative care employee to another hospice and palliative care employee. So again, I will do another plug and shout out for, you know, our folks here in, you know, Ampath Health. If you have any interest in, you know, connecting via email, having a buddy pen pal relationship with anybody at our sister hospice, just call me or send me an email. And, you know, I will work with Jackie, and we'll make sure that we get the connection made as soon as possible.
You know, one of the ways that we've been combating this isolation that we feel so often with the pandemic at Ampath is by using Zoom to have something we call a call to connect. And it's just an opportunity for people to get together virtually and share their thoughts and well, to connect. So, you know, I was wondering if that might be something that we could do somehow with our sister hospice in Soweto.
I think that's a great idea, actually.
So Jackie doesn't know this yet.
One of the ideas that came up from our last partnership meeting was something similar. People wondered, could we schedule like a series of Zoom meetings with Jackie for people to talk, ask her questions? And I like your thought of expanding it, that, you know, it's kind of like a, you know, an ambassador program, just a way for all of us to get to know each other. And like how we do our connect that you and others have worked on, just have an open time, do it via Zoom, be super easy.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. As we're coming to a close, I just wanted to see if anyone had any last thoughts that they wanted to share before we end our time together.
I've got a comment to make. And I think it's just one of these things that do go around. And somebody made a comment on our palliative care organization that, you know, we don't waste a good epidemic. While that's, you know, very tongue in cheek, with challenges comes an opportunity for growth. And I think through our own economic challenges, I know myself as a palliative care practitioner, I've been able to grow a great deal by losing our social worker, she was an important part of our team, and I've had to take on a greater social support role, a spiritual support role. These are all skills that I've gained over this time. But in relation to COVID, I think we've and that speaks, Stacey, to your idea of it. I would really like to connect with other disciplines, not just with my own. Because I think there's so much to learn across disciplines. In relation to COVID, I think here we've met this great foe that is it's scary, and it's putting a lot of people in the space of a fear and how will you respond if this does happen to you or to your family? And I think we haven't utilized it nearly enough to show what we can do. And unfortunately, palliative care does get a little bit of a bad rep, where we are sort of the end stage processes, and almost invariably, I think people have a positive experience with us once you get there. But there's this great fear of involving palliative physicians. And the truth is, in this COVID pandemic, there are many people that are not expected to survive. This is a topic that we are comfortable with. And it's one of our great strengths that we have to offer. Here we are on the other side, and I think we are seeing a whole bunch less, but I think it is telling that I haven't seen a patient with COVID at the end of their life. I think there's something that that we have to offer in that space that is important, and it's being overlooked. So maybe this is an opportunity for growth. I don't want to say pushing our agenda, but it is a little bit of our agenda that needs pushing, and that's across all health. Even within the cancer space, even with the life-threatening illness space. So that was just the comment that I'd like to make. And Stacey, I really liked your use of the word profound. I've noted it about three times, and I think that's about how many times it's been used. And yeah, I think we have a profound role in this pandemic that we haven't been able to, for lack of a better word, use. You know, we haven't been able to show our skills and show a way we can make a difference here.
Jim, I would just like to add, and thank you so much, Doctor, for sharing that, because when we first visited and we saw the mutual compassion fatigue of taking care of HIV/AIDS patients, I think it's very similar how we are taking care of COVID patients now, and that what we learned from caring for those patients in both of our hospices and the palliative care there, we're using those same skills and more so, and then taking care of each other within our staff. So back to Jim and what you suggested, everybody, I think it's very commendable that we are exercising our own self-care as we're trying to be there for other people in the front lines, yes. as they're and dealing with caregivers. But we also have to stop and care for us. Practice what we preach.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I want to thank Stacy and Dwight from Suncoast Hospice, as well as Jackie and Craig from Hospice Vits for sharing from the richness of their experiences. One of the interesting insights that arises from these interactions with people dedicated to the work of hospice who are all across the globe from one another is seeing what unites us, and then also how each of our experiences are so vastly different. Here at Suncoast Hospice, we deal with the ongoing challenges of ensuring that we're meeting regulatory requirements while still providing excellent care. We're in the middle of a merger. We're awaiting a decision about expanding our services into another county, anticipating a visit from Joint Commission, and we're deep into transitioning to a whole different electronic record. Certainly a lot going on. Whereas at Hospice Vits, the ever-present struggle is not meeting government regulations, but securing the funding needed to pay essential staff and to equip their inpatient units with needed supplies. Yet, when that nurse or social worker or spiritual care provider is at the bedside, it doesn't matter if it's in Largo or in Soweto. We all face that sacred moment of connection when we're caring for another human soul who's facing the end of their life. That's a need that crosses geographic, political, and ethnic boundaries and unites us in the critical work that we do. If you have been inspired by what you've heard on this podcast and would like to make a financial donation to Hospice Vits, please contact us at 586-4432. You can ask for Stacy Orloff, and she'd be happy to help you to navigate making that donation. Again, thank you for joining us for Spiritually Speaking.